What are we here for? In other words, what's Ma'afyan this group here? I can't speak for Tikva, I just speak now, but I'd like to try to, at least from a Torah point of view, everyone here is obviously looking for something different, else, more, something they're not happy with. And I guess we can be, it's either people who grew up in the system and fret and they want something, they're not happy with something, or people grew out of the system, came into it, and still feel, you know, there's something missing or whatever it is. I'd like to describe what I think is what we can do, what we should do. I want to use two verta to describe two points around the same nekuda. One is, it says in Devarim, Hoyel Moshe Beres Devar Torah Zois, so as Torah Zois. So Rashi says he was mevayret, he was metargamit in shivim lashon. Everyone understands that it would be very shallow to think of shivim lashon as the equivalent of Google Translate. Everything Google translates is in shivim lashon. In other words, every single translation is shivim lashon because it doesn't. But that's not the point of it. That someone should come along and say Moshe Rabbeinu should say lechem is bread. And chleb in Russian and breut in German. It's silly. That's not, you don't need Moshe for that, it's not no point to it, and so on and so forth. The translating a musak, translating a concept from one culture to another culture is excruciatingly difficult, like we spoke when we started this thing over here. It's very difficult. A bezdin and a court, it's not quite the same. It's not just Hebrew and this. A bezdin has a different feel to it. It's a different entity, and therefore the translating Torah, the Chassidus Shvam says, Sasemis says that Moshe's translating Torah allowed for Torah to apply to every Jew in every society that he'll be. There's a way to translate Kedusha in English, in French, in anything else. That is one point. A second point is I want to say about Varshan and Brisker Rav. Brisker Rav said, I heard this from Rav Goldberg, Sein of Racha. I never found it printed, but he said it over. I might have heard it. The Pasuk says, Dvash v'cholov tachas l'shaynich. A Pasuk in the Shashim. So Chazal say, Im arivim advarim kidvash, emor. If the divrei Torah you're about to say are as pleasant as honey, say it. And if not, kavsham, I think it's tach shenich, keep them to yourself. So Briskerov asked, what are we talking about? If the shtickel Torah is not true, but it's very geschmack, then even if it's very geschmack, you shouldn't say it because it's sheker. If it's true, what do you care whether it's a ravim or not a ravim? The truth, whether it irritable or not pleasant, you should say it. So the Rav said like this, we're talking about divrei Torah that are true. But kvoida shel Torah is mechayev to say it only milsa de miskablin, things that people find pleasant. If you say something that is great, not upset, but great, it sounds foolish, childish, whatever it is, then it's not kvoida shel Torah to say these things. Those are two things. Let's go back to the mashal we used yesterday about the mountain. Every single person here, from the world we come, what keeps what the common denominator is that we all found, the people came from far, the people who were born in, that there's an emes that's in this world that you have no other place. It's mitzad, the intensity of learning. It's mitzad, the real mitzvah. It's not that Rabbi Shua said we're more careful with mitzvahs. That's not quite the right way to say it. It means a lot more to us. The reason why, given a chance, it's a mila that in my society, a fancy and expensive little maestrik is more meaningful than a fancy car. It's not a mita toive that I have a fancy little maestrik because people will say it's nice, but it does say something. So the fact that it's so meaningful to us, this life, and the primacy of a Torah life, is incredible. But once you need to translate it, and translate is in many ways. It's when you're talking to someone else. There are a lot of things, I used to listen to Israeli talk shows where people call in, and I would sometimes wish I could trade some of the charedim in, to the other side. I mean, it was hard. I cringe. I stopped looking at some newspapers. A person will screech and yell and scream, and it's illogical, irrational. A person, there's nothing wrong with saying, I hear what your taina is. I know the army needs us, and I know that you guys want blood. I cannot give over my child for 3 years at most vulnerable age to someone else's. I can't do it. What can I do? This is my core belief. That's a statement that a person can say. But when you start saying, my Torah is protecting you, what do you mean my Torah is protecting you? Come off it. You don't believe that. As soon as if you hear a bomb, you run to the shelter. You call the policeman when the ganav comes. You don't sit down with a gemara. If you hear somebody prowling, you don't sit down with a bar mitzvah. You call the police. So stop with that. The ability, I've told Jonathan that he is changing many things with the way he writes. And Rabbi Yitzchak for sure. No, it's so the core mission is, how do you translate Torah Musagim? And it's in many ways. Every single person, I always tell people, the same Chassidish Yid who's standing and pushing a line, if you knock at his door, we'll let you sleep in his house for a few nights. So it's not a lack of caring for other people, but the inability to translate personal chesed to a social structure that's pleasant. The same Dachanam, try to a non-from person, knock on his door and say, I don't have a bit of sleep tonight. And a Chassidish guy once called me a skvera, and he was talking, what do you want to some sfarim, whatever it was, we got talking, I don't know what person I'm at him. And he was telling me a story about Ashkacha, that there was somebody in his brother's house for years who slept there because he had no other place to sleep, and his brother, it was quite annoying, but his brother didn't have to throw him out. Finally, he got rid of him, and then he himself lost his apartment, and he felt his odiyos b'shamayim. How do people think like that? A person who doesn't belong there. It's something, but there's an inability to translate that into a thing like a Hirsch. If we want to make a viable economy built on Torah principles meaning the respecting each person's kinyanim and allowing for each person to have what he needs, that's a translation process. When you're talking to people outside, at least you can disagree, but the nechbadas that I'm not talking just the form of speech, it's, are you answering reasonably rationally, even if your stance is totally opposite the other person, do you have the kalim to address it? Divrei Torah, it's so depressing when people that have so much to offer and so much to say and don't say it. They don't know how to say it. They don't understand. I'm not talking about forms of speech or anything like that. I'm talking about more substantial things. To be able, why should a person not expect that? If I'll ask everybody here the following thought question. If you had $1,000 on you, and you wanted to go to the beach, and you have two people to trust, a Chassidish Yid and a non-frum person. I think everybody would choose the Chassidish Yid. Now I'll ask you, if you had $1,000 to invest, who would you give it with? I think you can all figure out who. So why is it, so it's not dishonesty, but it's the inability to translate honesty on a clear $1,000 to investing honesty. And it requires being able to think with words and terms and ideas that are out. So that are not part of the inside, they don't. It's the Shivim Lashon, not in Torah. But you need to have that Tirgum. So I guess what's very important is to have the ability to be Metargim Torah into Ayin Lashon. Ayin Lashon is the full gamut of human necessity. And it's not only because it's nice for the fry person. It's nice for yourself when you can face questions that are difficult, concede what you have no answer for, explain why you still feel that way, and despite the fact that this person, and explain your position in a way that's cogent, because if it's cogent, it's cogent to you as well. There are some, and you can even tell a person, listen, we're starting from very different perspectives. I have a very strong belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Torah. These are mandates that I feel are the core of what's right and wrong, and I can't agree with your feelings and so on. If you can express it and you can understand it, you've gone a big way forward. That's one part of what a significance of things like this, of programs like this is. I want to also dwell a second on the other, on the flip side. This is something that Rabbi Yeshua Pfeff spoke about, education and so on. I grew up, I don't remember the 50s terribly well, but the 60s I remember well. The school I went to was the old RJJ. The old RJJ was like Skokie. It was kind of a Miller Road school, had a bit of everything and so on, with a lot of kids, 1,000 kids, with no common denominator, like it's the world Jewish. That was about the only common denominator. It ranged from Siddish to Yeshivish, to middle of the road Baal Batim, to modern Orthodox Baal Batim, to non-Orthodox. It was a community school the way schools were. There is no panacea in education. Mark was in Rambam and MTA, I believe. They have their share of problems. There is no way, and one of the things for many of us who've moved right to the Haredi world, the question is, how do we keep the kids with that spirit that we have, with the fire of Torah, and complement it? It's not simple. The question is, why have other schools not been successful, and why have some yes been successful? What exactly does it take to make a kid, in my mind, one of the reasons why Rav Soloveitchik was unique is because he grew up a Briska, in a Briska home, and branched out. He didn't grow up with roots in two places. He grew up in a fairly, I mean, his mother was kind of more modernish and so on. But at the end of the day, his basic conceptual terminology was compatible with yeshivas. It was a broadening. There was a broadening, and then he went to university. How do we do that? In other words, in my own philosophy, I want the Shoresh to be Torah and everything else to be that expansion like Rav Hirsch. Let me share two stories about Rav Hirsch that really, to me, is sort of a compliment to what people talk about. Rabbi Kassil Yehuda, I believe his name was, Greenwald. He was a Rav in Columbus, Ohio in the 30s, Hungarian Yid. He wrote a Kobel Avelus, which was a popular Avelus handbook until all the modern Kitzurim came out. But he was a Rav in Columbus, a typical Hungarian Rav, came to America. He was a historian also. And he wrote different things in history, and he was a historian, sort of a fair-minded historian. You read it, and he writes about the reform movement in Hungary and the opposition, and he writes a criticism about how the Frum people handled it. A lot of very interesting material. It's, you know, something you can disagree with, but Akapana, the person, is a certainly interesting person. And he writes that he learned by Rav Shlomo Hirsch for some tkufa. He went to learn there. And he writes he was disappointed with Zerach HaLimud. He felt there was way too little pilpul and a lot of pshat. But he said when Rav Shlomo Hirsch got up to speak, you felt he was a Navi Hashem. He said it was like the Shemaim opened up. And this was a person who had been in Hungary and heard powerful speakers and very strong speakers and so on. He said he was unique. He said you felt it was Dvar Hashem. The person, everything about him and everything, that's one story about him. So you can't, his everything else pales. Everything else is a branch of having that type of inner conviction of it being Dvar Hashem. A second story I'd like to tell over is, I'm trying to remember where I saw this. I quoted a few times. He learned for a while with Gretz. Gretz came to learn for a few years. His Seder Limud, where they would wake up 4 in the morning, they would study, I think it might have been Tehillim or something, but they also studied Greek. They might have studied Kant. They studied like 3 or 4 things that are not yeshivish. And that sounds fascinating. Now, Gretz writes in his diary, or somebody else writes, he found there was another philosopher that he read, and Rav Shlomo Hirsch said, this is absolute kfira, it has to be burnt on the spot. And the person said, it's a library book. Says, no, you have to burn it on the spot. He finally was convinced them to get it back to the library and not to burn it. But there was no automatic, you know, checkoff that this is, you know, it's chachma, we have to learn it. It's chachma if I decide it's chachma. If I feel that this is emes because it's a hemshechta, it's how Torah looks in this world. And it's funny, the Goyen also writes that he found two emes of things by Kant and so on. Interesting, but there was no, he didn't blindly follow. Well, if the world thinks this is a great curriculum, I should adopt it. It was Das Torah deciding. And people disagreed. The Bereshit disagreed. That's fine, but it was not, and that's why. I look at myself as somebody who's gone sort of, so my graduating, we had an education that could conceivably be considered to be equal and very good and everything else. The amount of boys from my class that ended up with some level of frumkeit, or and certainly a passionate level of frumkeit, is kind of small. There are many reasons for it. There are many reasons, but I'm saying one of the reasons why I told somebody once, Eishet Torah, they were very into the cheder system. It's no good. They had different types of cheder. I mean, I don't do limud chol. I had to do learning this system, that system, the other system. And you know, people come to me. They're very innocent. I would tell them, listen, I agree with you. It sounds good, but I never would like my child to be the first one to experiment on. It's a problem. It's a problem. In Eretz Yisrael, you have the tradition of Shivik Tanis, and you have the problems. And the problems that Shua pointed out are genuine. I agree with it. On the other hand, you had you had many of the Shivot Tichoniyot that they produced wonderful soldiers and scientists and other things. I'm not talking about great Tamei Chachamim. Even the people of Shomer Mitzvahs, there's a likeness to it that certainly doesn't appeal to me. I have a next door neighbor in Eretz Yisrael. His name was Tzvi Ayalon Zechon Evrach. He just died a year ago. He was a Talmud of the Satmar Rav, who became Dati Lumi. And he was a Skan Rashi of Be'er Sheva. He headed some sort of southern front line by the war. Interesting person. I liked him a lot. He was my next door neighbor. He was a very shrewd person, very smart, very, very, it was a person that was very pleasant to spar with. I really enjoyed it. I used to spend a lot of time with him. I really enjoyed it. Once he was telling me, you know, yeshivas are not doing it right. That was not, you know, it was always turned their heritage, it was always this, their arm was a doctor. You know, the whole thing, he was giving me the whole thing, why don't they have this, why don't they have that? I told him, Tzvi, I said, I have a perfect formula for you. I said, at that time, the Mafdal was much stronger, the Dati Lumi community was much stronger than the Chayyim community. You have an incredible amount of resources, and schools, and universities. I said, instead of me having a medical school in the Yeshiva to produce the Rambam, you've got one in Bar Ilan or wherever. If you would put out 5 Rambams, you would close down all yeshivas. I said, if you would produce a model that would, on a Torah way, would compete, I said, then it would be, you would empty out the yeshivas. I said, why is it that I have to bring in the medical school to produce a Rambam? Why don't you just bring Torah into your place and beef it up? What's the problem? You've got the resource, you have everything. I told somebody once came to, a young boy came to us, to our yeshiva, and I asked him what he liked about it. He said he feels it's very balanced. Because, you know, guys go to school and this and that. I wasn't happy with that answer. And I said, let me explain to you something. I like coffee. And you have a matzav where you have a piping hot cup of coffee, and you let it cool down, and then it tastes really good. But if it's l'chatchila lukewarm, it's horrible. I'm sure everybody, all coffee people here agree. If it comes out lukewarm, this morning, by the way, the coffee was cold, Mark. So that was Now, I did use some ingenuity. I took hot water with coffee. So that was, we were able to get around, figure it out. But at the end of the day, how do we produce someone who has the nefesh that we were attracted to? And I think every single one of us, whether we came from the left and moved to the right, or we were on the right and we were discomfortable to issues, to lose, and when I, you know, my children all, basically almost all grew up in Eretz Yisrael, and it was a decision. I had moved in a certain direction, and more than anything else, I wanted this. It wasn't that I was having all the details. The question is, in my mind, I guess if the world was perfect and Tikva was running it, then we would have a...
Can I quote you?
I'll tell you, you can quote, but put like a question mark exclamation. The world was perfect and Tikva was running it? You know, so it depends on the time. On the time of Mikra. On the time of Mikra makes a big difference. then you want to start out. At a certain age, a boy needs to feel his challenges of learning. Will I be a Bitam Chacham? Will I be this? A Chazir said this. The teenage excess fire needs to find itself in learning. I once heard a tape from the Belzer Rav. Belzer Rav is kind of a very practical person. And he says, a bucha came to, he says, Buchim sometimes have these fantasies, imaginations. He says, a bucha comes to me and he says to me, he's struggling. Should he become like the Chazan Ish or like Rebar Lebelz? So he says, Icha was opgelacht in my heart. He says, in my heart I was laughing at this kid. But he says, I treated him very seriously. A kid, a teenager needs his shtusim. The question is what those shtusim are. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a pattern of life. We start from being kind of very much following what we're told, our authority figures, parents, school, society. We then become very passionate and break away from everything and then become, you know, extreme. And then we sort of settle down and the cup of coffee becomes bearable. The question is, how do you do it in a way that you don't lose that neshama? You know, and somebody told me the following anecdote, and I think it's a tremendous touch on the dilemma. I was going to go Dalia Elfenbein. You know who that is. He met an old Yid in Mansi. And this person told him, when I was considered a bright child as I grew up. And when I was 15 years old, my father took me to Rosh Hashanah to test. My father felt I had potential becoming a big Rav. And he took me to Rosh Hashanah to show me off. He said, the Sameach tested me. And he said, not bad. He's worth another 2 years of learning. And then look for Mlocha Kal Nekiya for him. He said, my father went home. He cried for 3 days and three nights. Sent me to learn for another 2 years. And then trained me whatever the person was doing. So this old man said, our generation is missing two things. Gedolim, that will tell people your kid will do well with another 2 years of learning and then just look at Kal Nekiya. And parents that will cry 3 days and three nights over that psura. That's an extraordinary point. It's something that the neshama and guf aspect of it that we struggle with, and that's why it's so treacherous. Is it the Mura Chol that caused the problem? I don't know why. To be honest, I'm not sure why it would be. Is it the attitude? Is it the struggle with the other people? Is it that they're? I don't know. But on the dilemma of our world is, and no one here wants to lose that. Our biggest cynics over here. Where's Chaim? Our biggest thing, everybody's here knows it, for their kid not to have felt the oomph of answering a kollega's kasha and fighting with the Rebbe about it and losing himself in two mishmas and so on and so forth. That's the core of us. And whatever we do, on the other hand, the ability to take that engine, that reactor, and translate it into the what's needed in society. It as long as the Kashbar gave us a goof and a physical world and before, I don't know, Achris Hayom of some sort, we have to be able to translate so that our physical world is compatible to our Ruchnistika world. And that's a dilemma we're facing. And one more point on this. I don't think we will not accomplish anything by fighting with. Fighting doesn't get you any place except in Cheir. That's about the only thing. It's not a tool to get, and you never convince anybody by fighting and arguing. However, you know, there's I think it's called Grisham's theorem that bad money drives out good money. When people read Haredi viewpoints that are presented reasonably well, not just, all of a sudden they lose cheshek and other things. If every single person minimally is going to have a home, if your kids, I went through this, my father was an extraordinarily reasonable person with a lot of, very level-headed, extremely wise. He wasn't a public person, he was a shamus at shul, but he had, when I was a teenager, I broke away. I felt that's not emes. Emes is, very passionate emes. When I got older and came to my senses, that voice of reason came back again. If we succeed in, if you talk to your children, you don't have to convince a child. You have to convince your neighbor. But if your tone and the way you present it and everything about it is with seichel, with tuf tam and reasonableness, it will change things. If the type of stories you tell your child, if the stories are stories that have a message and they have a chance of being true and they present a certain picture, the picture that your child will have is built on the stories you'll say. You need to be what you feel is emes. You don't need to contest. If somebody comes and says, so-and-so said this, to say I disagree head-on, it's a chutzpah. But if you say, it may be very well applied only to a certain situation, it may have not been asked correctly, the halach is this way, and we need to do this, and so on and so forth. Being able to build a positive image of what's right will change things, will make things. People will pick up things that are good and right. I know my kids, they read a lot. Once better books have come out, even the Haredi, Chaim Sabato, was not Haredi, but his books in Hebrew are awesome. And when you read that, you have a hard time picking up something else. When things that people can look up to are really put into place, and a Dorchedach Noam, if a person is a Ben Torah, if you have only nasty remarks about the creative world, and you spend your time doing very little except eating chon someplace on Thursday night, hacking or going on and blogging away on some creative site, then basically you're reinforcing the picture. Yes, somebody who is not bikanoi is a shegitz. Take a look at it. It splits evenly. But if a person is erlich and yerei shemayim and honest and shakur learning and doesn't hack, and he thinks differently in a reasonable way, then people say, the correlation is not exact, and that's really part of the challenge of being able to do things that are right, not in a way that sort of satisfies your own personal juices and so you can hack more about how bad everybody else is. I think we'll leave off with, I think doing things in a positive way is something that will get you there. Our job is not. The core of the Yiddishkeit, Reb Chaim Kanievsky, is to us the Tzuris Adam, who's Kuli Ruchnis, that we look up to. Our kids can look up and say, here's a person that's Kuli Torah, nothing but that. We also need to say that we are not like that. And we, when we deal with this world, we need to know how to deal. How do you speak to somebody who's not religious? How do you deal with somebody else's conflicting needs and so on? That is all, that's the Hashlama that we could possibly do. Okay, I have 3 minutes left, and then the Baruch Hashem, the train comes. So if you have anything, if 3 minutes to add or to say, whatever it is, good point. I want to give you a yashar koach for giving me the opportunity to be here. Yes, who's?
Quick question.
Yes, quick.
She was spoken before about this, last time about the strata.
Yeah.
Saying that time is the dogma of something that we'll talk to as the shkitz. The strata is very nice in an abstract fashion. Okay, so I talk about the society like that, but my own kids, you want your kids to be the shpitz. You don't want your kids to be the second, third, fourth tier. So how do you? So if there have to be people who fill those tiers, but at the same time we are objectively saying that.
So I would disagree with that, and let me explain to you. I would like my kid to be the person he ought to be. Now, the way to find out what he ought to be is when he tries his hardest at a certain age, and then there's a certain, like it says, Chazal say, if you try 5 years, I want my child to be the person that Kadosh Baruch Hu wants him to be. Now, it has to do with giving him the fire of Torah and Emes to start with, and helping him find the makom that Kadosh Baruch Hu wants him. Is he meant to be the Rav Ruderman, who's out of things? He meant to be Rav Neuberger, Or is he meant to be an accountant living in Baltimore? It's two phases. You start by building the core, the neshama, and then slowly helping him come to grips and so on, and realizing, you know, mayesh.
Yeah, but a father cries over his son in that case, so is that crying?
It's a cry for yourself, not for the child. The child should never see that. It's just like the Havdol of Havdolos. Let's take something. You're right to tell a child, if you work hard in school, maybe you'll make it to Harvard. But making it to Harvard shouldn't become the do or die for the child. Even Yale is good sometimes.
Everybody at Yale Law School got into Harvard.
There's a personal she'ifa, but it never should be imposed on the child. It's a recognition of what's chashev. At any stage, being a big Talmud Chacham is very chashev. What do you do with a kid who's slower? So it hurts you that he can't be that big Talmud Chacham, but you need to say, but Akash Baruch Hu made him who he is to realize his potential. That's the important.
Instead of trying to express thanks to the Rosh Hashiva for coming for Olah Chizuk, we're going to wait to deliver those thanks next year.
Okay.